Well, a great good morning to you. It's supposed to be a rainy day. Later on, we're supposed to have some heavy rain, apparently, so be careful, stay dry. Today and tomorrow is the Mahashivaratri. Tomorrow evening, Monday evening, starting at 7 o'clock, just about dark, we will start a celebration. Just how long it will last depends on the enthusiasm of those who come. Please do come. It's an unusual thing for us. It was started at the behest of devotees, and we will have our very special Aditya Chaturvedi probably saying a few words and also singing some bhajans, leading us in bhajans, having to do with Shiva. And for those of you who are of the English-speaking persuasion primarily, there will be some songs in English, I promise.
What day?
Starts at 7. Starts at 7 p.m. Come as you can. Stay as late as the enthusiasm. Tomorrow evening, yes. Mahashivaratri. I'm glad I'm not in Hollywood, because in those days I'd have to make about a quart of white sandal paste. Grind it by hand for all of the for the main worship and all of the Shivaratris and the side worships that would take place on Shivaratri. Someone else now has that delicate task. So that was the first announcement for this morning. The next announcement is that Seva Saturday for March is next Saturday, March 9th. We have a lot of work to get done, always a lot of work to get done, but especially that day because the Master's Puja is the next day. Sri Ramakrishna's birthday celebration is on the next day, Sunday. So Seva Saturday starts at 10 a.m. and goes to 2 p.m. Lunch is served at 12:30, but please don't feel as if you're being called on to spend the whole 4 hours here. Just come as you can, stay as you please, it's just good to participate. We're having a good crowd turnout these days, so it's good fellowship. We also, of course, need karma yogis for routine seva around the center. That's even more the case now that my brother has moved over to Clarkston. So we need some help with the yard and so on. So please email me if you'd like to participate as a karma yogi on a regular basis, rather than just once a month on Seva Saturday. As I mentioned, on Sunday, March 10th, starting at 11 a.m., we will celebrate Sri Ramakrishna's birthday. We'll, of course, have a puja. Our Aditya Chaturvedi will serve as our pujari. Afterward, we'll share a potluck prasad lunch, as usual, in the monastery. For those of you who like to participate in that sort of thing, shrine decoration begins at 10 a.m., followed by a short talk and the worship at 11 a.m., then lunch at 12:30. If you're bringing food to offer, please have it here no later than 11 a.m. As always, we need volunteers. You can help with puja prep or serve in the kitchen. Puja assistants, please be here by 9:30. Kitchen people by 10:30 a.m. As I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, I'm very pleased to announce that we have a weekend retreat at the end of April. Mark your calendar for Swami Nirakaranandaji. He's an assistant minister at the St. Louis Center, and he'll be here from Friday evening, April 26th, until Sunday after lunch on the 28th. offering his wisdom about Raja Yoga. Now, it's a somewhat special occasion to have Swami Nirakarnandaji here, because he is an exceptional singer and instrumentalist, primarily on the harmonium, but also on other instruments. So most of his lessons on Saturday, during his workshop on Saturday, will involve singing. He will sing us a song. So if there are no other announcements that I didn't think to make, anybody have anything? Okay. We'll start with our chant. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahano Bhunaktu, Saha Viryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace. Peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. And I'd just like to note that that prayer was chosen by Swami Yogeshananda many, many years ago to reflect the fact that this place studies Vedanta with you. It doesn't deliver Vedanta for you. It delivers or offers Vedanta with you, so that your participation happens every Sunday after the talk and in the classes we hold is very much a part of it. We study Vedanta, we study the art of spirituality together. Come, let us go forward together. Because today's topic is the phenomenon of Sri Ramakrishna, I'm going to start with an observation in the form of a hymn that Swami Vivekananda wrote. Swami Vivekananda, of course, was perhaps the most intimate disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, certainly the one given the most broad-ranging assignment. And he wrote something called Kanda Bhava Bandana, which Swami Prabhavananda and Christopher Isherwood translated. Their title is Breaker of This World's Chain. Breaker of this world's chain, we adore thee, whom all men love. Spotless, taking man's form, O purifier, thou art above the gunas three, knowledge divine, not flesh. Thou whom the cosmos wears, a diamond at its heart. Let us look deep in thine eyes. They are bright with the wisdom of God, that can wake us from Maya's spell. Let us hold fast to thy feet, treading the waves of the world to safety. O drunk with love, God-drunken lover, in thee all paths of all yogas meet. Lord of the worlds, thou art ours, who wert born a child of our time, easy of access to us. O merciful, if we take any hold upon God in our prayer, it is by thy grace alone, since all thine austerities were practiced for our sake. How great was thy sacrifice, freely choosing thy birth in this prison, our iron age, to unchain us and set us free. Perfect, whom lust could not taint, nor passion nor gold draw near. O Master of all who renounce, fill our hearts full of love for thee. Thou hast finished with fear and with doubt, standing firm in the vision of God, refuge to all who have cast fame, fortune, and friends away. Without question, thou shelterest us, and the world's great sea in its wrath seems shrunk to the puddle that fills a hoofprint in the clay. Speech cannot hold thee nor mind, yet without thee we think not nor speak. Love, who art partial to none, we are equal before thy sight. Taker away of our pain, we salute thee, though we are blind. Come to the heart's dark cave, and illumine, thou light of the light. That is recited every evening here at the Evening Arete, for those of you who haven't heard it before. It's recited every evening at, shortly after 6 o'clock. March is a month for the study of Karma Yoga, a spiritual path leading to the abandonment of selfishness. As a karma yogi, you practice offering your actions and their results, as well as your perceptions, thoughts, and feelings to the divine presence. Even before fully knowing this presence, you hold firmly to the belief that the presence is within each person or other living being that you interact with or serve. Working and abiding in this spirit, you are increasingly able to release attachment to your activities and their results. This yields the freedom and contentment promised by Karma Yoga. In Chapter 2 of the Gita, Sri Krishna says to Arjuna, "Even a little practice of this yoga will save you from the terrible wheel of rebirth and death." And as you listened to Breaker of This World's Chain, I'm sure you came to a feeling that you can understand the title of today's talk, The Phenomenon of Sri Ramakrishna. What Swami Vivekananda writes about him in Breaker of This World's Chain truly describes a phenomenon. As I said, next Sunday, March 10th, we'll celebrate Sri Ramakrishna's birthday. There is a direct link between that great master's life and teachings and what you are hearing just now. This morning, we will talk about that timeless connection. Here is what Christopher Isherwood wrote about Sri Ramakrishna as he started his book, Ramakrishna and His Disciples. Some of you know Christopher Isherwood was a dear friend and collaborator of my guru, Swami Prabhavananda. He served with the Swami for many years, decades. And at Swami Prabhavananda's request, he wrote this book, Ramakrishna and His Disciples. And here's how he began the book. "This is the story of a phenomenon. I will begin by calling him simply that rather than holy man, mystic, saint, or avatar, all emotive words with mixed associations which may attract some readers and repel others. A phenomenon is often something extraordinary and mysterious. Ramakrishna was extraordinary and mysterious, most of all to those who were best fitted to understand him." That's the end of the quote from Isherwood. Ramakrishna was extraordinary and mysterious, most of all to those who were best fitted to understand him. Two people who were best fitted to understand Sri Ramakrishna are Swami Vivekananda, his most famous disciple, and his wife, Sri Sharada Devi. This morning we will explore and discuss some of what Swamiji and Sharada, Holy Mother, wrote and said about Ramakrishna. As their knowledge of him is shared, the connection between the Master's life and your presence in our chapel this morning may become more clear. First, who is Sri Sharada Devi, Holy Mother? This is from Swami Nikhilananda's biography. As was the custom in those days, Holy Mother was married to Sri Ramakrishna when she was very young, 5 years old. But she didn't, of course, live with him until much later, and that's what we're going to hear about just now. When Holy Mother came to Dakshineshwar, the temple compound where Sri Ramakrishna lived, when Holy Mother came to Dakshineshwar at the age of 16, Sri Ramakrishna asked her whether she had come to pull him down to a worldly life. Without hesitation, she said, "No, I am here to help you realize your chosen ideal." From then on, Holy Mother lived with Sri Ramakrishna as his spiritual companion, devoted wife, disciple, and always the nun. She was the embodiment of purity. Her mind was never sullied by the faintest breath of worldliness, though she lived with Sri Ramakrishna for the greater part of 14 years. She never missed communion with God, whom she described as lying in the palm of her hand, though she was engaged day and night in various activities. And for all of us, it's just such a wonder to read the life of Holy Mother. How she was always, continuously serviceful, even when she was ill, even when she was not particularly disposed to do so as a thing of the moment, as a thing of the gunas. No, she would push right through. It's really something to read about. And here's what Sri Sharada Devi, Holy Mother, said about Sri Ramakrishna. "He who has really prayed to the Master even once has nothing to fear. By praying to him constantly, one gets ecstatic love, prema bhakti, through his grace. Pray to the Master with tears in your eyes whenever you want illumination or find yourself faced with doubt or difficulty. Pray to the Master with tears in your eyes whenever you want illumination, or find yourself faced with any doubt or difficulty. The Lord will remove all your impurities, assuage your mental anguish, and give you enlightenment. Even avatars, saints, and sages have to undergo the ordeal of suffering, for they take upon themselves the burden of sins of omission and commission. They take upon themselves the burden of sins of omission and commission of ordinary human beings, and thereby sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity. We have to surrender ourselves completely to the Master, with faith and devotion in him, serve others to the best of our capacity, and never be a source of sorrow to anybody." These are Holy Mother's observations about the Master and her instructions about how to be in relationship with him. We have to surrender ourselves completely to the Master with faith and devotion in him, serve others to the best of our capacity, and never be a source of sorrow to anybody. If that is not a perfect description of ahimsa, we wonder, what is ahimsa? There is the definition. So we have Holy Mother's definition of Sri Ramakrishna as avatar or incarnation of God, the divine taking birth in human form. Necessitating that they undergo the ordeal of suffering. Here's what Vivekananda has to say. In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna declares, "Whenever virtue subsides and vice prevails, I come down to help mankind." Human beings drift away from any knowledge of their true original nature, become less than fully human. An avatar is both fully human and an avatar is both fully divine and fully human, fully conscious. To be fully human is, in part, to bring the subconscious into waking awareness, consciousness. That's the end of the quote from Vivekananda. Modern psychology says at least half of life is thoroughly irrational or unconscious. This appears as our dream life, and in the waking state, intuition and imagination, daydreams, our yearnings at the edge of awareness. An avatar's role, to embrace the irrational, to make the irrational known, seen in a positive light, and leave instructions to make it accessible to us. Does irrational mean unreasonable? No. Nothing must violate reason. But we know that our dream life is irrational. We know often that our dreams and yearnings are irrational. We must embrace them. We must be able to embrace all of that. The avatar helps make it possible for us by, as Jesus said, "I have overcome the world." And they have the ability to pass that on to us. The second attribute of the avatar, they erase by taking to themselves karmic debt. In Christian terms, the remission of sin. This allows a spiritual seeker to achieve the goal, liberation, moksha, with enough effort in this lifetime. And we just have to remember what Sri Krishna says in the Gita. "Turn to me in utter devotion. I see no sinner. All of your past life is as if nothing had happened. I see no sinner. Holiness itself will transform you, shall transform you." Third attribute of the avatar, they can pass on the knowledge of how to become fully human, the spiritual practices, and how to assume karmic debt to their followers. We can ponder that as we think about what it means to be of service to others. The avatar, of course, is the Mahaguru, the Guru of Gurus. Sri Ramakrishna himself said, "Anyone and everyone cannot be a guru. A huge timber floats on the water and can carry animals as well. A huge timber floats on the water and can carry animals as well. But a piece of worthless wood sinks if a man sits on it and drowns him. Therefore, in every age, God incarnates himself as the guru to teach humanity. Satchidananda alone is the guru." But as Swami Brahmananda said, the master has left with us the keys to the treasure chest. They pass this along to their followers. And it is ours to grasp if we will make enough effort. This is Vivekananda, in part of his definition of an avatar, an incarnation of God, from his talk, Christ the Messenger. That talk was given in January of 1900 in Pasadena, California. Christ the Messenger. Quote, The omnipresent God of the universe cannot be seen until he is reflected by one of these giant lamps of the earth. The prophets, the man-gods, the incarnations, the embodiments of God. We all know that God exists, and yet we do not see him. We do not understand him. Take one of these great messengers of light, compare his character with the highest ideal of God that you have ever formed, and you will find that your God falls short of that ideal, and that the character of the prophet exceeds your conceptions. You cannot ever form a higher ideal of God than what the actually embodied have embodied. You cannot ever form a higher ideal of God than what the actually embodied have practically realized and set before us as an example. And speaking specifically of Sri Ramakrishna in his talk, My Master, Vivekananda said, "This man came to live near Calcutta, the capital of India, the most important university town in our country, which was sending out skeptics and materialists by the hundreds every year. Yet many of these university men, skeptics and agnostics, used to come and listen to him. I heard of this man, and I went to hear him. He looked just like an ordinary man, with nothing remarkable about him. He used the most simple language, and I thought, can this man be a great teacher? I crept near to him and asked him the question which I had been asking others all my life. Do you believe in God, sir? Yes, he replied. Can you prove it, sir? Yes. Can you prove it, sir? Yes. How? Because I see him just as I see you here, only in a much intenser sense. Sri Ramakrishna answered his answer to Vivekananda's question, how? Because I see him just as I see you here, only in a much intenser sense. That impressed me at once. For the first time, I had found a man who dared to say that he saw God, that religion was a reality to be felt, to be sensed in an infinitely more intense way than we can sense the world. I began to go to that man day after day, and I actually saw that religion could be given. One touch, one glance can change a whole life. I had read about Buddha and Christ and Muhammad, about all those different luminaries of different times, ancient times, how they could stand up and say, be thou whole, and that man became whole. I now found it to be true, and when I myself saw this man, all skepticism was brushed aside. It could be done, and my master used to say, religion can be given, this is Sri Ramakrishna speaking, religion can be given and taken more tangibly, more really than anything else in the world. Be, therefore, spiritual first. Have something to give, and then stand before the world and give it. This is our challenge. This is our challenge. It's there. The incarnations have not gone anywhere. They are still right there. For those of you who will believe it, they are present in the picture. They are present in the name. They are present in the thought. If you have the thought of them, they are present. If you draw that image, that name, that thought to your heart and persist in holding it there and concentrating on it there and speaking to it there, it will reveal itself to you. As Swami Prabhavananda said in his first instruction for meditation, the chosen ideal is you yourself, no different. Learn to feel that living presence. We have that ability. And for those of us who struggle, and we all struggle, the incarnations have overcome the world. They have mastered the waking consciousness. They have mastered the subconscious. They have mastered the unconscious. They are master of the gunas. And if we ask, we shall receive. This is the last paragraph from Vivekananda. Religion consists in realization. As a fact, we all know that nothing will satisfy us until we know the truth for ourselves. However we may argue, however much we may hear, but one thing will satisfy us, and that is our own realization. And such an experience is possible for every one of us if we will only try. And that is the very definition of the phenomenon of an avatar, a phenomenon of an incarnation, phenomenon of Sri Ramakrishna. Practice just a little, Sri Ramakrishna said, and someone will come forward to help you. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. Praise Him, all creatures here below. Praise Him above, ye heavenly host. Praise Thakur Ma Om Hari Om. When each of these great ones say in their way, I am master of the gunas. I can make the impossible possible. I have overcome the world. It is only for us to yield to that. Push aside the constant objections and doubts of our left mind. And say, no, no. Be quiet, be quiet. The master says this, let me try. Such an experience is possible for every one of us if we will only try. That's what Vivekananda says. So, having said all those wonderful things from Ma and Vivekananda and otherwise, what has it given rise to you in you? This is the part where we study the art of spirituality together. What are your comments? What are your questions? What is it that still needs to be opened up for you?
These are the words which reinforces our beliefs and our faith.
Yes.
Because the faith is, you know, especially in this world, is so wavering. And these are the words that, you know, we need to hear more often. At least it will build up the faith in it.
Yes. Our belief will become faith. Our faith will become Shraddha. And as we hold to that Shraddha with both hands, as that beautiful old African American spiritual says, hold on to the plow, hold on, hold on. Yes, we need to repeat these thoughts to ourselves. This is what's called recollectedness, mindfulness. And when we do, something happens. There's no doubt about it. The yogis tell us it's true. The transformation takes place. And even such as Dr. Pim van Lommel, this Dutch cardiologist who studied the phenomenon of consciousness and came to the conclusion that our cells, which are replicating themselves at the rate of 500,000 per second, replicate themselves differently in the presence of a different form of consciousness. If our world, if our consciousness remains worldly, our cells will remain worldly and will continue to pull us in that direction. If we force, as Swami Brahmananda says, if we forcibly pour the thought of God into our mind at first, then the cells replicate. I mean, this is the physical reality. We are a constantly changing stardust spacesuit. And the more we keep these thoughts in our hearts and in our minds, especially in our hearts, just imagine 500,000 cells per second are changing. During the hour that you are in here in the morning, a lot of you changes. That's one of the reasons that the sattva that prevails in here leaves you kind of walking on a cloud as you leave this place. And, of course, as Balakrishnaji just pointed out so eloquently, then the world pulls at us, the gunas pull at us. As Krishna, as Arjuna says, the mind is wild. I swear the winds are not wilder. And Sri Krishna says, yes, but they can be tamed. The thoughts can be tamed with patience and effort. So we must be patient with ourselves about the wavering. And as soon as we can, pull ourselves back into, particularly pull ourselves to the heart and remind ourselves of these truths that we are told. They're truths for others until they're truths for us. But they'll never become truths for us without the effort to test them for ourselves. Anybody else? Anything? Yes, dear.
I just wanted to share the story that I came across recently that appealed to me about faith in God and love for God. So there's this very simple but sincere devotee who goes to the temple every day and prays to God ceaselessly. One day he decides to ask this priest, whom he holds in high regard, that, oh, you pray to God every day, you have direct connection with God. Can you please ask God if he likes my prayers? So the priest kind of gets annoyed and he doesn't do it. So every day the devotee makes the same, did you ask God? Does he like my prayers? Finally the priest, one day he tells, yes, I asked God and he doesn't like any of your prayers. So the devotee starts jumping and dancing in joy, tears pouring down his eyes and just really overwhelmed. So the priest is asking, are you sure you heard me correctly? I told you that God does not like your prayers. So the devotee says, well, I always knew my God is so compassionate. He is so busy, he has so many things to do. Yet he listens to my prayers so carefully that he knows that he doesn't like what I'm doing.
Isn't that beautiful? That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. So I am. Anyone else? Yes.
There's another question about Shankara, about the first characteristic of an avatar. I don't think I fully grasped what you were trying to explain about the irrationality. If you can just say a little bit more about that.
Let's think about Tantra and the practices of Tantra. 64 practices. Most of our fears are irrational. Most of our doubts are irrational. Almost without exception, our fantasies are irrational. Many of our memories are incorrectly remembered. They're not rational. The avatar, when Jesus said, "I have overcome the world," and then we look at the life of Sri Ramakrishna and see that over the period of 5 years, he mastered all 64 of the tantric practices, which are the ability to master all of the rationality and irrationality of the waking consciousness, the rationality and the irrationality, if there is any rationality, to the sleeping or dreaming consciousness, and then the total irrationality, since there is no reason there is no mind there, it's inconceivable to us what's even meant by mastering the unconscious. And yet, this is what is the Bhairavi Brahmani said of Sri Ramakrishna, that he had mastered all three. Just imagine sitting for meditation on the body of a fresh corpse. Just imagine sitting in a corpse in which there's still activity going on, the remnants of the activity of the stardust spacesuit are continuing. It may burp or suddenly jerk. Sitting for meditation on a fresh corpse. Sitting for meditation regularly in cremation ground, which Sri Ramakrishna said was full of very, very bizarre spirits that are drawn there by death. If we read the Shiva Purana, we see that much of what is said of Shiva is not rational, doesn't fit within rationality. So the master of the gunas masters the irrational aspects of the gunas as well as the rational. Is that enough, or is there still something more?
Well, when you say rational, are you thinking about not necessarily just the rational mind?
No, our irrationality, all of our attributes are throughout our whole being. We break it into mind, body, spirit, just for the purposes of talking about it, but it really isn't one, any more than Satchidananda is three things. Our mind, body, spirit is not three things. It's one thing. It has its, we can, say, well, there's the reptilian brain. Well, the reptilian brain is a part of us that is constantly looking for danger and to protect us from danger. And along with the left mind, which is so wonderfully inventive and often totally irrational, those two things can produce the most amazing things. The extremes, of course, are insanity and to a lesser degree, conspiracy theories and things like that, where whole edifices of belief are built on the tiniest shreds of evidence. It's irrational. Sri Ramakrishna became Hanuman, leapt from tree to tree in the Panchavati. It's said he even began to grow a tail. I wasn't there. The way he behaved certainly did not seem rational to the priests of the Dakshineshwar temple. And they implored Mathur Babu to get rid of this insane priest. Mathur and Rani Rasmani said, "No, no, we trust him. Let him be." It's notable that even Swami Vivekananda said to his brother disciples about Sri Ramakrishna, "You don't understand him at all. I understand him a little, but only a little. I really don't understand him very well." Yes, Uma?
No, when you describe phenomena, the word phenomena, and you say mysterious, that makes me wonder why. Because as far as I've seen, he was the most transparent, very childlike. His life was like an open book. How could we say, use the adjective mysterious? In what way?
All right then. How do you explain? I agree, he was. There was no pretense. He was completely an open book. And one of the things he said is, "I am whimsical. I am whimsical. I am capricious."
So to a rational person, you cannot figure out how he's like that.
Yes. Our left mind, our finite mind, will never be able to contain the infinite. This is an objectification, of an embodiment of the infinite, but it doesn't leave behind its infinitude. That's the remarkable part. I mean, we only, even as much as we know about the life of Sri Ramakrishna, there is so much in the oral tradition of the Ramakrishna order that has never been published anywhere. Simply because we simply would have trouble believing it. For example, just a peek behind the closed doors when he was just with those boys that became the monks. He took various forms, became various divine beings, both beneficent and terrible.
So it's like a puzzle.
Yes. There's no way for us to see the whole puzzle. We'll see the pieces that we can grasp. But it doesn't matter whether we understand the whole thing. It's enough for us to understand that if we ask for liberation, if we ask for spiritual illumination, for spiritual awakening from the avatar, from Sri Ramakrishna or from Jesus Christ or from, just pick your choice, it is available to us. They have that power. They have that power to grant it. Practice just a little and someone will come forward to help you. What a titanic promise. And it's the same thing that Krishna was saying when he said, even a little practice of this yoga will save you from the terrible wheel of rebirth and death. Not because you've saved yourself, but because when you begin to offer yourself to the divine, offer your actions, their results, your emotions, then something happens. Something happens. You begin to... Sri Krishna is so explicit about it. He said, even those who are doing things that are not anywhere accord with our scriptures, but they're following the instructions of their teachers, and if their goal is spiritual realization, I'll get right behind it and make it happen. Yes, Dr. Mudge.
There are a few stray thoughts in my mind which I try to explain. Number one, phenomenon is not a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And we confuse between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenon as a definite, explainable reason which you have to explore and keep on exploring for the lifetime, and you may or may not be able to get to the depth of it.
Mm-hmm.
Miracle is something like the technology has completely eclipsed our mind, and that is something which comes in our way of having the true perception of God.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to see miracles.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you gave the example of Krishna. Krishna, Sri Krishna was a phenomenon who never performed any miracles. It was within his power. If the miracle was the thing, then he would have annihilated all the Kauravas, and he says, Pandavas, now you rule for the rest of your life. He did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you have to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something people do not want to hear.
Right, exactly.
Secondly...
But he helped.
He always helps.
Yes.
That is the phenomenon.
Yes.
That if you help yourself, then something will help you. It's called the phenomenon. Depends upon how you place it. Many times I give the story to the children and they remember for a long time that this was a lawyer who was so successful in his life that he put a sign on his table, God is nowhere. And then, like it happens in everyone's life, things started getting worse. He started losing battle after battle after battle after battle, and then he was completely helpless. And he looked at the same sign, God is nowhere, and shifted the W to the left side. So God is now here. But what happens that whenever we are successful, we do not think of God.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is what is coming in our way.
Yes. We don't learn much from our happiness. We learn from our suffering. Yeah. We don't seek God when we're happy. But that doesn't mean that we should forget God when we're happy. As it says in the Chandi, Mother gives to the faithful a mind still further, to the happy, a mind still further pious. The faithful happy.
But that's why Ramakrishna's answer that I see God was a very real, rational answer.
Yes.
If you keep on seeing God, it will stop you from so many things which you don't want to do.
Yes.
Because you have a feeling that you are being watched. And we do not have that feeling.
Yes.
We always know about one corner where if we go and do something, God will not watch us.
Ah, there's that wonderful Sufi story about the Sufi teacher who brings his students in, and there's four students. He gives them each a live chicken.
Yeah.
And he says, go slaughter this chicken where no one can see you, cook it, and bring it back. So the next time they meet, three of the students come with their cooked chickens, and the fourth brings his live chicken. And the master scolds him and says, well, I thought I told you, go somewhere where you can't be seen, slaughter the chicken, and cook it and bring it. Why did you still have the live chicken? And the man with tears in his eyes said, but I could not find anywhere where God could not see me. And the master then, of course, bowed to him. Yes. Yes, dear.
When God is our consciousness, how can we find a place where there is no God?
Exactly.
That's our consciousness.
Right.
If all we are.
This is what Swami Prabhavananda was pointing to when he said,
it's in everybody.
He said, the chosen ideal is you yourself. There's nowhere. You know, sometimes I'll come and I'll find that the people have done arati, and the top of the shrine is all very nice and neat, just as it had been. But I'll look in the drawer and everything's all higgledy-piggledy. And I'll think to myself, don't they think that God can see in the drawer? So, you know. No, if tattvamasi is true, if aham brahmasmi is true, then there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide. We can pretend. A lot of the time we do. Anything else? This is great. Okay.
Even our idea of a reptile brain is subject to challenge.
Of course.
Because reptile brain is also a part of God's creation. And therefore, it's not less crude or less developed or evolved either. That is the reason why Lord Shiva, whom we will worship tomorrow, he keeps a serpent right in his neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of the side that is not rational.
Symbolic.
But you know, you're absolutely right. If I were an alligator lizard, I would want those reflexes that the minute the shadow falls on me, pow, I'm gone. Because that shadow is probably a cat. Might be just the cloud passing. But maybe not.
That is why in our mythological stories, there are so many stories how God helped kitten, dog, alligator, elephant. So that we may not carry an impression that as human beings, we are automatically blessed to know God more than any other species.
Yes, well, there's that wonderful story. I don't remember now the number, but was it 28 animal teachers that the student had? It's one of the Puranas, I think. Anything else from anyone? All right. Well, I saw some sweet people bringing things in for us to partake of after the talk. How lovely. So we'll close with this ancient prayer for peace. And as we listen to this prayer, just think about how we can evoke this in ourselves. This is Swami Yogeshananda's translation of this lovely ancient prayer. Let there be peace in outer space. Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters. Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees. May the gods be peaceful. May the whole universe be pervaded by peace. Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace be unto us and to the cell phone.